1 minute. Sounds like we're about ready, Mr. Duncan. Yes, sir, we are. Well, it is now 1 p.m. I want to welcome all of you to the Los Alamos County Board of County Commissioners special meeting agenda. Today is February the 13th, 2024. It is 1 p.m. We're going to call this meeting to order. So please rise for an invocation given by Commissioner Luis Lopez, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance by Commissioner Tony Haas.
Please join me in reciting the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, commissioners. Roll call, Mr. Duncan. Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Here.
Mr. Haas.
Here.
Mr. Felix Lopez. Here. Approval of the agenda. Do we have any changes to the agenda, Mr. Duncan?
No changes, Commissioner.
I'll entertain a motion.
Move for approval of the agenda.
Second the motion.
Mr. Luis Lopez.
Yes.
Mr. Haas.
Yes.
Mr. Felix Lopez. Yes. Today, we're going to go to section two. We're going to have a public hearing. It is on the Model Water Users Association. So I'm going to call this public hearing to order, and it is 101. So let me go ahead and go through some rules of engagement. Anyone that wishes to testify before this board will be sworn in, and the testimony will be redacted as part of the official minutes. And I'm going to ask anyone, whether is online or present, that your testimony be basically germane, only related to the topic which we're going to be speaking of. As the chairman of the board, I have the authority to stop the meeting, so any vulgar language becomes involved in this process, and this meeting can stop at that point in time. So please remain from any type of insulted language, and then you have basically there's no limit as your testimony goes forward. So having said that, we're going to be meeting today once again with the Model Users Association that has 9 customers. We're going to go through all this information as we go through. So having said that, I'm going to call basically the first witness to this meeting. And I think, is that going to be you, Dana Kroniger? Yes, please come to the podium. And I'm going to ask you to raise your right hand.
Okay.
State your name, please.
Dana Kroniger.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm under the penalty of perjury that the testimony you're about to give in the matter before this board shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do. Yes.
Yes, you do.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
What was the question for you?
Yes. thank you so much for being here, Ms. Kroniger. And so please proceed with your speaking points. So at this point, the ones that are going to be testifying, the order is going to be first the proponents, and then if there are any opponents, certainly we'll go. That's going to be the second phase of testimony that we're going to receive. Please proceed.
Great. Thank you. Well, thank you for facilitating this meeting today. I appreciate your time and the county's involvement in the project and hopefully success of the project. I will be reviewing the agenda that everybody has in their hands and just reviewing the project. I don't know, we can, any questions? I don't know if that's okay. I'm okay with interrupting, I don't know. But obviously as commissioners, you're welcome to interrupt me. I'm fine being interrupted as I go through this. So I'm gonna just go ahead and proceed. The project is for the Model Water Users Association, which is a private nonprofit water association that has 9 customers. The association constructed a water treatment plant and completed distribution system improvements in 2005. This project addressed compliance issues related to naturally occurring radium. Since the completion of the project, I'm just going to refer to them as model, has decreased in size and is no longer a public water system. In 2005, they were large enough. And for your own information, 25 people is the limit. So if you're under 25, you're not a public water system. And they have fallen below that. So they're actually not required to comply to the Colorado primary drinking water standards. But that is, they would like to still be in compliance, obviously want to treat water for their constituents. A preliminary engineering report was completed on behalf of Model, which included evaluation of this water system, including supply, treatment, storage, and distribution. The treatment units that Model is currently utilizing is under manual operation, and Jackie over here is the one that does that on a daily basis. And the backwashed water pond, so in a water treatment process, you have backwashed water to basically remove all the contaminants from the treatment units, and it's discharged to a backwash pond. That liner has failed, which that means all of those contaminants are now leaching into the ground. The treatment units are planning to be replaced with the project, along with the relining of the pond. I want to make note that the treatment units model has struggled with the manufacturer and product representative for the current treatment units and have receive very poor service. And that's part of the reason why they're in the condition they are in, because nobody's wanted to come and visit them in their remote location. So they would like to replace them with a different manufacturer, which is readily available. The other component is there's a water line that goes between Model, kind of the Model town site and the Earl town site. Actually in 2005 in that project, that line was identified as being to be replaced. So nearly 20 years ago, that line was also not in great condition. 20 years have just passed, nearly 20 years have passed, and that line is still having a lot of challenges and a leaking, and a lot of water loss is happening because of that line. So it wasn't affordable then to be replaced, but now it's just out of necessity, like there is no choice, but that line needs to be replaced. And then really, again, as Model, even though they're not a public water system, they do desire to comply with the primary drinking water standards. If for some reason they were able to, if they went over 25 people, they would become a public water system and have to comply again to the standards. The nice thing about it is, you know, they have saved a lot on cost. So they haven't had to spend a lot of money on sampling. And so that has been at least allowed them to build their reserves a little bit. The proposed water system improvement consists of the following. So replacement of the treatment units and then replacement of the backwash water pond liner. There's going to be some piping repairs internally and then some modification to the electrical components inside the water treatment plant. And then again, as we already said, the line between Model and Earl is about 17,000 feet. So that will be replaced. It's a good distance between the two for a pipe project. The proposed project cost is right at $1.7 million. And this project, the reason why we're having this public hearing is for the Community Development Block Grant. And that would hopefully, you will be successful, the county on behalf as a pass-through agency for the Community Development Block Grant will be awarded $600,000. And then the other component is really through the US USDA Rural Development will have both a grant loan combination. I do have kind of the best scenario for grant loan combination, and that won't really be known until we walk through the process. So we can see down below that we have the CDBG grant would be about 35%, and we're hoping that the loan component will only be 13%. Without final funding, the rate adjustments aren't known. The project cost can't be finalized, but we anticipate a rate increase. I think in our report, we said it was like $8.90. They already have really high rates. I think their average bill is like $122 per household. So thanks for being willing to contribute to help facilitating this process, because that just lowers that potential rate increase. Our project schedule, as we are looking at this, really verbally, they authorized design in November of 23. And then we are submitting the application here in February. And then we plan to have approval of both the report and the environmental report in March. And then we plan to submit specifications for review in June. We'll receive the final funding commitment. So even though we're submitting this application now in February, they don't award it until June of this year. So that's when we'll find out if they're successful. And then we hope to continue later this year, August, of getting the financing packaging from RD. And then part of the component of rural development is they require a bridge loan. Maybe they will not require that this time, but it does add extra cost to the project. So they have to get a bridge loan for construction. And then when construction ends, then they execute their loan and pay off the bridge loan.
So what happens if you don't receive this grant?
That's a great question. We'll have to just talk to rural development and then see what their grant loan combination ends up being. And if worst case, we have to just pare down the project and then really make some hard decisions on what they're going to move forward with. So.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for being here today with us. And the question I have for you is on the contaminants leaking into the liner. Is the model for Social Water Association in non-compliant right now with that? And would that affect negatively, positively, CDPHE or any other organization at this point in time?
It's actually really interesting is that actually when you're in non-compliance, it's actually easier to get money. I know that it sounds kind of funny and it feels a little backwards, if you're not doing, if you know, because there are some communities that are non-compliant because they're not responsible with it. But some are out of no choice to themselves. So it's actually easier to get money if you have non-compliance. Right now, because Model is not a public water system, they're just not on the radar at all with the health department. So the health department's like, you're too small. We're not even looking at you. So there is no, we don't want to be doing that. So out of being good caretakers of our environment, they shouldn't be doing that, but there's no quote compliance to it.
So is that through the state or through the local public health office?
The state is the one that would be reviewing that. So typically how this would happen if they were a public water system is there's something called a sanitary survey, which happens, I think, every two or three years. And someone from the health department comes and reviews, just as an inspection of the system. And that's at the point where they would say, hey, your liners failed. And then that's when that would get tagged. But because they're not having those visits.
I guess my concern is there any liability to the county if we move forward with this and the grant starts and the construction? And during the meantime, the liner's not replaced till 2025, completion of construction. Is there any liability to the county? That's my concern.
Okay. You guys don't have any ownership over that. And so I would say no. That's kind of a more of a legal question. But I would say no, because you aren't owners of it. And the way that this grant is really, you're considered a pass-through agency. So even with that, even with the grant, you're not taking control of any of the assets by facilitating this grant. You're just one of the components of CDBG. It allows local governments to be a pass-through to nonprofits.
Okay. And then the other question I have, so this would be the $600,000, the CDBG grant as the pass-through, correct?
Yes.
So, God forbid, something goes wrong and the association cannot move forward with their loan payments to the USDA or something. Does that implicate the county in any way regarding repayment on this?
There isn't any repayment. So, yeah, the loan won't be through you at all. It'll be strictly through model. So the only component that you have is the grant. So there's no liability.
They're not stackable or tied all together.
No.
In case of liability.
No, because once the CDBG grant will be utilized during construction, and then it gets closed out, and it's, you know, then it's just finished. So probably pretty similar to, I know that you guys utilize the Energy Mineral Impact Assistance Fund quite regularly. So somewhat similar to that, other than CDBG, because it's a federal project, I mean, a federal program, like that's why we have to do this public hearing. We don't have to do public hearings for impact grants, which you could be really thankful, right? That you're not to have to do this for all your projects. But that those two programs that DOLA facilitates, this is kind of like, they're the two programs for public facilities.
And so in your comments earlier, you mentioned that because we're not compliant and in this bad of position, usually those grants usually seem to be successfully rewarded. Do you mm-hmm. feel that this is the case in this matter?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, we don't know who we're competing against. And so I just don't, I don't know who the other applicants are going to be. We are only submitting as a company. This is the only entity that we're submitting, helping submit one. Sometimes we submit three in one application period. So at least we're not competing with ourselves. We're not putting our clients against ourselves. So, but I don't know. It's pretty hard to say. I know Tara Marshall will say that it's become more competitive. So we'll find out after submittal how many have been submitted. I think there is a separate set aside for public improvements. So there's housing, and I'll talk about that in a minute because it is required that I speak about that. But we don't know.
Okay,
just like probably the impact grant, when you put those in, you don't really know what the competition is going to be.
And us, you know, of course, we wish you well, and hopefully you have had conversations with the CDBG representatives prior to, so you know that there is a pretty good possibility. Second, I just want to make sure that as we go through the process, that the communication with our finance director is going to be so tight. So when there is reporting, that the communication is in there, because on it, as fiscal agents, we want to stand strong for you, but we also want to make sure that the county, as the reporting agency, is timely and promptly with all the documentation that is requested, so we can put a beautiful check mark in there and go get another project.
Yes, and you know, Tara can speak to this, and even the CDBG current, I've been in actually a lot of conversations. I do want to make you aware that, and I thought I put this in here, but I didn't. So model with CDBG, you have to have over 51% of the population. Maybe I put this in an email, that over 51% of the population has to be low to moderate income. And so model and rural are not defined places, as you can imagine. And so there is not sufficient data with the state demographer to say, oh yeah, they're low to moderate income. So we've been working, Jackie has been doing a great job, and I've been working with both the gal who is the head of the CDBG program in Denver and the state demographer's office, and they're in the process of doing an income survey to prove that they qualify for this. If for some reason, we have to have this all done by April. If for some reason the surveys are turned in and they don't qualify, then the grant will stop. Like they won't hear the grant. But it was, and unfortunately, I've had other communities that are also not defined places, and they've had enough demographic information to still determine that they're low, that they meet the requirement. And in this case, I think the population is just too small for them to make that determination. So we should know that in the next month.
Is there an opportunity in there within the grant language to put in as far as underserved communities? One, because of the geographical location, and two, because this commodity, which is water, is not readily available nearby. I mean, how far are you from Pinyon Canyon that actually would give you an extension to?
Mm-hmm.
And I think all that has to be somehow woven through the process in the language so they can see that not only are we a rural county, but we're a frontier county, which makes probably another talking point for and on behalf of the community.
Yeah, exactly. We actually, in the application, it talks about alternatives. And I wrote already about that, about Pinyon Canyon. We explore that as an option, tapping into that line. But the problem is that agreement actually is with the city of Trinidad. And the city of Trinidad does not allow any livestock watering with that. And the users, even though it's a small number of users, there are users that use it for livestock. So therefore they would be out of compliance with that agreement. Plus, you may know how much if you're inside the city or not, but it's basically double the water rate. It's $5.50 per 1,000 gallons, which is pretty steep. If they could use livestock, it becomes unaffordable for those that are using it in that way. So in the application, we do address that. We do talk about being underserved, and really the LODA, it's really this ratio that is the CDBG, even at a national level, that's how you get qualified, is your LODA moderate income.
And I think the county fits that demographic, the whole county. So that could be helpful for you, yeah. Jackie, doing the research, because the per capita income, what the last time that I saw the census was like 24,000, correct?
24, 28, somewhere around there.
So that puts us well below that threshold.
Yeah. Think. I'm going to just make a note here.
I use that verbiage a lot. I sit on the EIF committee. Yeah, so I work with Tara, and so I try to stick up for southern rural Colorado.
Yay! Thank you.
For those reasons, because they fall in that.
Yeah, categories. I'm gonna make a note in the application. Although the way that the CDBG works is it's like who's the end user, and so this is actually the third entity that we've had the counties be pass-throughs to other entities that I'm currently working with, and they had to like define the end user, but I think that is a really good point. So
and Tara will know those numbers also.
Yeah, and it is also like on the community, on the demographer website, because you're right, like the whole county does qualify for CDBG, but the specific area of Model and Earl was indeterminate. So,
would pictures work, Jim? Go down the bottom and take pictures.
I know. I was like, and I'm quick to say where I failed. I should have done this probably this fall. Is done this income survey, but Jackie's on it, and we have to have actually 100% response. So all 9 customers have to respond, but we'll have that sorted. And the state demographer has been great to work with. Okay. That's great that you're on the impact committee. That is encouraging to me because we submit a lot for that. And I always want rural communities to be well represented. So thank you. Okay. Where do we leave off? The bridge loan. And then approval of plans and specifications that also happen in October. And then they have something that's called letter of conditions, which is just basically a lot of different components that you need to meet. And then we'll be advertising next year and then going to construction late spring and into July, into the summer. So that is the schedule, as long as there's nothing that prohibits that in any way. But I think a lot of the things that usually hold up projects should be straightforward for this one. On the environmental construction side, we don't see any long-term impacts. It'll mostly be due to construction. So construction noise, dust, and added traffic. We need to edit that, Phil. That should say near the water. I sometimes catch errors. It should say water treatment facility. And I can give you an edited version of this.
Wastewater?
Yeah, it says wastewater. That was my not reading that closely. I apologize. Construction activities will incorporate bus management practices to mitigate erosion and sedimentation. And we don't anticipate any long-term environmental impacts.
What happens to the people that live out there when they're doing this construction? It's going to be... It's going to be onerous on those individuals that live out there because there's going to be a period of time where you're not going to be able to get water, correct?
Usually when we have an existing water line, like the between Model and Earl, we keep it the whole line active. So you just construct right next to it and then you tap into it at the end. So
it's not like when we're fixing a hole, right?
Let me follow up on that. You mentioned that since this is going to be pretty much a federal project, federal finance project, is there going to be under the environmental perspective, are you going to have to do any type of archaeological survey along the water?
I hope not. Okay. I mean, maybe. I don't know.
Well, because it's going to be going through private property. However, because the federal government always puts one of those things that you have to have an environmental study, make sure that there's no known archaeological sites that you're going to be digging through. That keep an eye on that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've hired my fair share of archaeologists in the last year, let me tell you. So but because we're replacing, it's a replacement. Yeah. And at this point we're planning to keep the same alignment, and that's where you can kind of, we still have to consult with the State Historic Preservation Office, and in that consult, you know, obviously everything within the water treatment plant and the backwash water pond, that's all, we're not worried about that. But even that line, because it is replacement, they shouldn't have any comments. But if they do, then we have to hire archaeologists, then that's what we do.
Sure. And then I don't know if you have any contingency, once again, to cover those expenses. That's something to really think of. And I would imagine that's going to be part of the package letter of conditions. When you get that letter of conditions, they're going to tell you exactly what they're going to be expecting. Step one, step two, you need to do this or you don't have to do. And of course, I wouldn't ask it unless they propose that.
Right. Yep. Yeah. The letter of conditions, I think, vary from engineering things to, what are their user rates need to change to. So they'll give all sorts of things, but we'll have the environmental clearance well ahead of that.
And the line should fall. When you put the new line, it should fall within the actual conditions of the existing easement, correct? I mean, it'll be right next to the other.
Right. So then you're not worrying. You know, then that's usually right. the State Historic Preservation Office is okay with that. I say usually because lately it hasn't been. I mean, I just, like I said, I've hired a lot of archaeologists in the last year for our projects that I haven't had to in the past.
So a question regarding easement, and I'm not familiar where the location of this pipeline is. Is it in any way going to interfere with Highway 350 or any state highways at this time? Is it completely away from the...
Yeah, at this point, and if we did, we would get a permit from CDOT.
CDOT utility.
But we don't want to have it inside CDOT right away. Sometimes we'll have to have like construction permits if we're... You know, sometimes, like, thankfully, we're not having to do that with this project, but if we have to cross we have to have a bore underneath the highway, then we get permits for that and permission. But that isn't anticipated with this project.
And all the property owners on the existing right of way are okay moving forward with this project?
Well, I mean, they have the water line there. We will, as part of the project, we will confirm easements that they are there because it wasn't in our 2005 project, because we assisted with that project in 2005. I don't know that we confirmed easements, but we will do that. And if for some reason there isn't, then we'll get easements as well.
Okay.
So with the community development block grants, one of the things that's required with this public hearing is that other ways that CDBG funds can be utilized. One is economic development, drawing in a specific business. I think the most popular way that CDBG is actually utilized is for housing projects. And then the third option is really public works. So right now, the water system project has been determined to be the high priority by the elected officials. And so the question is, does this, the constituency, which have any other identified needs for CDBG money?
So let me then on that, can you make the case that with this water line, you can increase density housing? I mean, how many more residential dwellings can this water line support? 3 or more, and that 25, of course, is where maybe you want to or may not want to get to that point. But would that even be kind of a positive comment to present to the grantor when the case is being made and now you have access? You're laying up the infrastructure for additional housing.
Well, for housing, we could say that for housing. I probably make that very limited for potential housing. I would say, I'd have to say like low income housing. As you know, with grant writing, you never write anything about proposed development that you're not helping any developer with grants. So it could though be say, you know, this area could provide housing for low income.
Right now we're limited to what we can provide because of the existing water in the shape that it's in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One last question on easements and right-of-ways. Is there any county roads that this pipeline now crosses? And has that been addressed?
Is it cross the county road?
Let me.
Okay, County Road 48. Oh, sorry, can you not? Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Mr. Bergenkamp, we might have some questions for you. Would you please raise your right hand? And please state your name.
Phil Dorkin, Los Angeles County Commissioner.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm under the penalty of perjury that the testimony you're about to give in the matter before this board shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God.
I do.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairman. Mr. Dorenkamp, regarding any county road right-of-ways, is there a procedure that the model association will need to go through for permitting or any other issues that you might have for the county roads, including closures and or delays?
There is, we have a permit process, and you can go to our website and pull that down. And since that's a gravel road, required boring, they can trench it and backfill for our specifications.
Great.
We're easy to get along.
Yeah, and we are often getting permits, and it is built into the project budget is acquisition of permits and easements, and even the cost for an interim loan through RD is part of that.
Okay, I just when this project hopefully gets started, we make sure we protect the residents out there who are traversing back and forth on the county roads and making sure we have alternate routes for them, and especially or in case of emergency situations in our emergency vehicles.
Yes.
It's always a concern for fire.
And regarding the vehicles on that road and residents traveling on it, we require them to set up signs, et cetera, according to the manual on uniform traffic control devices. I should define they, that would be any contractor who's excavating across the county.
And Phil, is there an easily alternative route there? Because that's the road that goes down to Rose Foster's house, right? No. Oasis. Oh, okay.
It goes down to Abel Benavides and it's on down the.
Oh, I got you. I know where it is now. Okay.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you. Please proceed.
That's all. We don't have anything else.
Anybody else from the county personnel that may have any questions for Dana?
I do.
Yes, sir, please.
You talked about the other grants and loans. Are any of those secure yet?
Maybe no. No. Yeah, that'll be, this year will be primarily kind of what we do side by side is design and funding at the same time. So they kind of are parallel tracks for pursuing funding.
And in exhibit IC in the public hearing, public hearing, second paragraph, it states that Los Angeles County will conduct at least one public hearing to identify community development and housing needs. It goes on to say some other things, including the needs of low and moderate income persons. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's this. Well, it's interesting. So, as a precursor, there's a lot of paperwork with this particular grant. There's actually one that we need you to sign, which is the citizen participation plan. That's a requirement for the submission. But this, because the community development block grant is primarily housing, a lot of the documentation is housing related. And so that's basically saying, you know, if you need to present, like, what are your housing needs? Because the base assumption of any of these documents that are boilerplate documents are all based on housing. So most of them will say, like, it's not applicable. But that particular document, it's we kind of have to follow their exact language, even though this is a public works project. It's just the community development block grant is not built around. The main intention of it is not public works, although that's one of the things you can use it for. So I don't know that I answered your question.
This says Los Angeles County will conduct at least one public hearing to identify community development and housing needs. Are we going to have to?
No, this is the public hearing that. No. No, this is the public hearing. So we're basically identifying your public infrastructure needs. It's just we don't modify any of the language in those standard documents because those are straight from HUD. But this is that public hearing document. So you could kind of, or meeting, we're just basically saying we're presenting the infrastructure need rather than the housing need.
So are you ready to, perhaps the question may come when you are doing the presentation in front of the CDBG board, and they ask you, the question that I'm asking is, what is the capacity for this water line to support how many more dwellings? Because housing is, even though it's infrastructure, we understand that, but as far as housing, how many more units can you, and you don't have to answer that at this point in time, but I think as Mr. Doran Camp now kind of asked the question, that could be one of the questions they could be asking. How many more units can you support? Maybe somebody's relative wants to come back to the farm. Why not? Now you have access to, and then you have so many acres to build a property. So, and I think that's kind of to me, and I've worked with the CDBG program before.
Okay.
And so just I think the accuracy of what you're proposing, so we can be good pass-through partners, mm-hmm. the more we understand, the more information we have, we'll be better able to serve the project
in
its totality.
And just for clarification, the CDBG is different than IMPACT. It doesn't have a committee that you okay. present to. It's just the regional managers that come together. I don't know if you've heard about the pro-cons that they have. They'll have pro-con for the impact hearings. That is kind of their first pass at it before it goes to the committee. They do that, but it ends there, so they don't have another committee. So Tara is going to be the one representing this project in front of the other regional managers, and she will use this application as the base. And typically, before they have the meeting with the other regional managers, either we usually have a conversation to kind of talk through all the details, but I'll make sure to add that. I know I sent you a draft of the application if you'd like to review it, but I can add the housing piece to the application just so that Tara can have that as well.
I think in a conversation you might have with her, I'm going to put a clarification on
that. Yeah, that's a great point.
Yes.
I've got one other question. You said that Mrs. Foster's surveying the community to determine low to moderate income. What is that threshold?
Do you have that number? Is it 58? Yes.
Before you answer the question, would you please come
back? Oh, yeah.
That's where you get. We want to make sure that every T is crossed. So please raise your right hand. State your name.
Jacqueline Foster.
And Ms. Foster, do you solemnly swear or affirm under the penalty of perjury that the testimony you're about to give in the matter before this board shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Yes, so now we can go ahead and continue the conversation.
To the best of my memory, the high was 55,000 per year, but I don't remember what the low was. And it's divided out into how many homes or how many families per home and the number of residents.
Okay. And what is the year? Are you covering only like from 2020 to 2024, or how far are you going in the history for that threshold?
It's just the current. So
okay.
they're reporting on their current income. And it was the state demographer office that set that number. So they said, okay, here's the number. And it's the form is basically like, are you below it or are you above it? So if you have two members of your household, and you're, you know, so you would say above. So we're hoping that most of those people, we need more than 51% to be checking below. but it's you're not even listing how much you make. You're just listing above or below by the number of people that are in your home.
Sorry.
You guys are so detailed. I love these questions.
We do a lot of homework.
Yeah, it's great.
Yes. And anything else you would like to add to this, or anybody else that would like to, at this point in time, come up and testify in favor of this project?
One thing I just want to make note of, and I think I did talk to your attorney yesterday. So the citizen participation plan is required to be signed for application. And then we have to have, just like the impact grant, where you have to have board action for the submission of the grant, I'll have to have a date, but this grant isn't due until the 23rd. So if you are wanting to do that outside of this meeting.
And thank you for that observation. I was on the phone with her, and because we have our next board meeting on the 20th, we'll have enough time to actually sign that and also approve the project. So we'll have two items on that particular agenda to be approved.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, I'll be done talking now.
And if you have nothing else, go ahead and
okay. Yes.
I think at this point in time, I'm going to call on anyone, either in the audience or online, for any comment against this project. Hearing none, it is now 1:42. This public hearing is now closed. Thank you. And so now we're going to go to section 3, new business. Consideration of the United States Department of Transportation Thriving Communities Program Letter of Commitment. Mr. Dorenkamp, would you please walk us through that?
Commissioner, we've been requested to sign a letter of commitment for the Thriving Communities Program that's being pushed through the city of Raton and Colfax County. And give me a few minutes here and I'll text the individual and see if they're available.
Thanks, so.
Commissioner, do you want to recess until we hear from them?
Let's at this time, since Mr. Dornkamp is trying to get a hold of the representative from the city of Raton, let's go ahead and take a small recess. I'll entertain a motion to take a recess. Let's go for 10 minutes.
So moved. Second.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Thank you, commissioners. At this time, I'll entertain a motion to resume this meeting.
So moved.
Second motion.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Dornkamp. And I want to thank the representative from the city of Raton. And thank you so much for being here today. One of the questions that I was asking Mr. Dornkamp, and what is the difference if I see through some of the correspondence via email that in some instances, Los Alamos County is being asked for a letter of support. And on this particular letter, I see letter of commitment. What is the difference? If you can explain that to us, really be appreciated.
Yeah, I think now that we're at the, so we were notified that we were actually, our project is a finalist. Now they actually want the partners who were listed as key partners no longer to just be supporting, but actually to show a commitment to this project and this process.
For the record, ma'am, would you please state your name?
Oh, yes, sorry. My name is Ann Tice, and I work for Better City, which is contracted by the city of Raton.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ms. Tice. Appreciate that. Just for the minutes, make sure that we have the accuracy of those. And so once again, so the project, in a sense, it's being approved. Can you, for clarification personally, what is the responsibility of Los Alamos County, and what is the partnership and collaboration look like going forward?
Because it's a non-monetary grant, it's only a technical assistance and capacity building grant. There's no monetary commitment. It's really the partnership and cooperation to move forward with a regional multimodal transportation plan and looking at like, what are the needs in Raton? What are the needs in Colfax County? What are the needs of Animas County? And how can we improve multimodal transportation for the region, for the benefit of all people in the community, especially where there are already discrepancies and disparities between what people have access to? So for example, we know in this area in Colfax County and Raton, I-27 is going to be coming through over the next decade. That's a huge DOT project already. We want to make sure that that's done for the benefit of the community, for the city, for the county, and also for Trinidad and Los Angeles County, because we know that that traffic that's going to be coming through here is going to be going north through Los Animas County. It's mostly not going to be going south down to Albuquerque. How that is flowed, how the traffic goes, what other aspects of that are there, that's a huge impact to our county and your county. On the opposite side of that, we know that there is a Front Range rail passenger train that is coming down in Colorado, down hopefully to Trinidad. It sounds like it's going to be coming down through Los Animas County. And we, you know, also that's a big impact to the region. And we just want to make sure that I think we have resources to DOT people who understand large transportation projects so that our communities can best benefit and best plan for these projects long-term. So it's really just the commitment of time, partnership, communication, learning and sharing resources, being willing to also build your capacity for these projects.
And this is Commissioner Luis Lopez. Thanks for being here with us today.
couple of questions I have. Has this grant gone before the local regional CDOT Department of Planning region here recently or in the past? I'm not aware of it as I sit on that organization. And and if so, if not, are you planning to have this discussion with the local TPR? Because a lot of the funding that gets laid out on some of these projects, you know, whether identified as usually on a 5-year or a 10-year plan, and how is your organization going to work with the CDOT TPR, which consists of Huerfano and Los Animas County at this time?
Yeah, we have not spoken with them. I think that's part of this grant is that they will help us figure out what are all the right entities to talk to and to navigate the different hoops and the different jurisdictions between like where things are at the state level, where things are at the federal level. I think that's part of all of it. And especially where it's, you know, interstate, that's a big deal, right? And we need to understand all of the implications of that and make sure we're talking to the right partners.
And also, thank you. And on the I-27 interchange, I haven't seen that route as of yet. I've heard discussion of it. Has that been finalized from Department of Transportation? And has all of that land been purchased and moving forward that you know of? And is there a place where we can see the map of that interchange?
No, that is what we're working on right now. Is actually we need the next step is we're raising funds. I believe it might have gotten appropriated. Our senators here in our area in New Mexico, we're trying to push through some legislative funding to actually do the alignment study. So it is written to legislation that like the general route of I-27 that will go through Raton, but there has not been the alignment study. So once we can secure and get that funding through appropriations, then we will be moving forward with that and looking at where exactly will it go? Like what exit will it come to in Raton? Like it will be at the first exit, the second exit, third exit, what route it will take, what land will need to be acquired, all of those kinds of things will come with the alignment study.
So will this I-27 engage in Colorado as well that you know of, or is it just a New Mexico project?
Well, it's a Texas, it's coming from Texas into Colorado or into New Mexico. And then all of that, I mean, like I was saying, I'm not sure if it's actually, they're going to be considering it I-27 past Raton, but all of that traffic will essentially lead right into Colorado, right into Trinidad and up through I-25. The Ports, the Plains expansion is all about moving traffic from the border to the border. So from essentially, you know, from Mexico up to Canada in a north-south route, which would extend through Colorado.
And another question I have for you regarding the Front Range Rail project that you mentioned earlier. Have you reached out to the Front Range Passenger Rail and asked for their consideration working with that organization as well at this time?
I have not. I know that the city manager has been engaged. He's not here right now, but I know city. That he has been engaging
which,
with
which city? Raton.
Oh, sorry, City of Raton.
Okay. I serve on that board as well, and I have not heard of it yet. I have any conversation of New Mexico on any partnerships or discussions. So, and I've actually been serving with that board for a couple of years now. So if not, then that conversation probably needs to be had.
Definitely.
Before it's grouped into this.
Well, there's no obligation. Again, it's just a regional transportation, multimodal planning grant. It's not, there's no funds allocated. It's not saying we are specifically doing one thing, obligating anybody to do any of these projects. It's creating an overall plan to deal with some of these major transportation projects that are coming to the region.
Right. And I thank you for that. However, I would caution that your organization envelops any other organization without their commitment or support at this time.
because there's a lot of political issues that are enveloped with this, especially recently with Exit 14 and our local TPR, and also outside sources trying to manipulate that $5 million we have stated for Exit 14 here in Trinidad. So just cautiously giving you some advice when you move forward with this, and stating that these organizations have been consulted, and to my knowledge, neither the TPR, which and or the Front Range Rail, which I'm members of, have not.
Yeah, I don't think it says that we consulted them. We just said that these were projects that we know are coming into the region that we regionally want to be able to plan for and engage with, so that we can do it for the benefit of our communities with our input in them.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hatch.
Yes, thank you for this. And my question is, I'm reviewing these applications, and it says that we'll be working with the lead applicant. Who is the lead applicant?
The City of Raton.
Okay.
Yep. So, and thank you so much again, this Commissioner Felix Lopez. So this letter of commitment, and I'm reading off the letter, verifies that Los Angeles County is committed to working with the lead applicant, as Commissioner Hatches identified that, and other community partners identified in this letter of intent to advance the local vision and needs articulated in the letter of intent. So I think it's kind of a on the first step, personally, as I did quite a bit of research on it, it would be a fantastic idea if indeed Los Angeles County and Colfax County would work together to enhance these some instances forgotten part of both states, you know, northern New Mexico and southern Colorado. So is there any additional information that you want to provide this board as we go through this the approval or otherwise of this particular letter of commitment?
I think you got the, I sent along to Phil, to the county administrator, the actual letter of intent that I sent as the application. So you could kind of see the language in there. So if you have any questions about that, but again, there's no monetary obligation. It's really just like a technical assistance and capacity building grant from DOT, so that we in our rural communities can better and be better equipped to engage these large transportation projects, and also just thinking holistically about our region. So,
if selected for participation in the program, I'm reading the last paragraph, Los Angeles County commits to regularly engaging with the assigned capacity builder and members of the capacity community of practice. What is the next step? And if this was to be selected as a project worthy of continued exploration?
My understanding from them is that the next step, if we are selected, so we're in the finalist level, if we, once we submit this, they want, you know, to see all the commitment and what kind of commitment the partners are making, and then they'll make their final decision and then pair our region with a capacity builder. So at the same time this grant process has been going on, they also had a capacity builder technical assistance program where people who have expertise in those areas are applying to be those people to help communities. So we would get paired up with one of those groups that have the expertise that we're looking for in our region. And then we would just have, yeah, they would set up some sort of a timeline, regular meetings, find out what our needs are, and help us work through some of these projects, possibly identify grant funding, design engineer specialists for the different kinds of projects, and just help us navigate, I think, all of the rules and the jurisdictions over, you know, state DOT, federal DOT, things like that.
You know what? Thank you so much. Now, I totally understand the project from the perspective. And I think Commissioner Luis Lopez's comments, if and when we go to the next step, it would be very, very important to now engage U.S. Department of Transportation because of the intrastate then the New Mexico Department of Transportation, the local Colorado Department of Transportation, along with the fast rail system, because at the end of the day, all these entities need to be at the table identifying what opportunity for community and capacity builder is in front for this region of both states. I think that that would be my understanding. Am I kind of summarizing this whole thing properly?
Yes, I think that you, yeah. It's for us to get supported. They want to help us bring the entities together that we need to complete the projects and do the processes that we need to do.
One last question, if I may, Chair.
Please.
For the I-27 portion of that New Mexico, Texas, has there been any stakeholder meetings with landowners at this time regarding the route? And I know it's early stages, so probably not, but what is the possibility of construction of this without using eminent domain? Do we have an answer for that?
That I really don't know, unfortunately. I know that they have had initial meetings discussing what the impact would be to have the ports, the plane running, you know, the interchange running through this region. But again, without the alignment study, I think not knowing if what exit, you know, I think the common thought is that it most likely is going to run along the Clayton Highway. I mean, it's the most logical because there's already a route there that is essentially a highway. I mean, it is a highway, it's just not an interstate. But I think there are some other considerations, like there are existing structures and buildings that would probably have to get moved if it goes that route. So there might be ranch property that might be easier to negotiate with ranch holders. So I think it's hard to say and what's going to be stirred up until that alignment study is done. So we're really hoping that'll be done within this next year.
I just want to go on the record to state that I don't support eminent domain whatsoever, especially for our farmers and ranching communities. So I would hopefully advise that this group moving forward and whoever is the next steps really take a look, good hard look at this and compensating willing sellers appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Commissioner Lopez makes a very good point because, you know, at this point in time, I think our nation is going through the process where government's credibility is poorly received and certainly and rightfully so. And I think eminent domain, even though it could be for the good of all, eminent domain is one of those terms that this Board of County Commissioners in the San Luis County has pushed back so hard on at the state level, at the local level. When and if those conversations are engaged in, for the record, as Commissioner Luis Lopez is saying, that would have to be a custom replacement or the fair market value, and then it had to be a willing seller. I mean, we have so much ahead of us that at this point in time, I think personally, this letter is the first step that could actually bring a whole lot of economic development and impact to the region. And so, but we're going to have to walk through this process carefully as if the next steps evolve and we end up entertaining a conversation and Commissioner Luis Lopez that we just wanted to be noted. And so, Any additional information on that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think that this is, I mean, this is, again, part of this process. Like, it's to help us go through. I mean, some of the questions they ask are, how do you engage the community? And I think, I'm not sure what exactly you guys are looking at, but that was one of the questions on your letter of commitment from the county is, how do you engage communities? How do you engage disadvantaged communities? Because I think it's exactly what they want to know is that we're going to have an open community public process for any transportation stuff that we're doing. It's not just the government or the city or whomever deciding things, but there's an engagement level there with the community that's being impacted by these transportation projects.
Thank you. Mr. Dorenkamp, any questions?
No questions, Commissioner.
Anybody else from... Any questions? Okay, any additional information on this and that you want to provide this board?
Not at this time.
Thank you so much for being here. If there's no more discussion or dialogue at this point in time, this is a voting item. I'll entertain a motion.
Well, having stated the facts and listened to the presentation today, I cautiously would make a motion to approve the U.S. DOT Thriving Community Program letter of commitment as we move forward, hopefully adhering to the advice given today by this board.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Hans?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes, and as we go through, please keep the communication directly with our county administrator, Mr. Phil Lorenkamp. And if there is any foreseen or unforeseen landmines, let's keep our eyes open because we don't want to stumble upon something that is going to deter or impact the agricultural community. So those are going to be the conversations that we need to have at heart. So thank you so much. We'll sign the document and we'll forward that to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Have a great afternoon.
You too. Thank you.
Having no other business on the agenda, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second the motion.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Thank you all. Have a great afternoon.